from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. It's the slur heard around the world after it was reported yesterday that President Donald Trump disparaged African nations as, quote, shithole countries, and questioned why the U.S. would want to admit immigrants from Haiti. Nations, lawmakers, and others are condemning the vulgar attack. The president is denying the reports about his meeting with lawmakers, but here today is Illinois Senator Dick Durbin.
The president interrupted him several times with questions, and in the course of his comments, said things which were hate-filled, vile, and racist.
In this half-hour forum, we get your reaction to this latest news and what you think the implications are. You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can email us, forum@kqed.org. You can post your comments on Facebook or tweet us at KQED Forum. Joining us is Eva Patterson. She's president and co-founder of Equal Justice Society. Good morning, Eva Patterson. Hi, Eva Patterson. Are you there?
Yes. Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can now. Thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you.
We're also joined by Jonathan Lemire. He's a White House reporter for the Associated Press. Good morning, Jonathan Lemire.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So I just want to get some information from you about the latest from the president. So what did he say this morning about the reports that he used these vulgar remarks about African nations?
Well, the president took to Twitter, his favorite medium, this morning to provide some pushback and context to what happened yesterday. In particular, he objected to the phrase that he said, the reports that he said, take them out, in terms of referring to Haitian immigrants. Now, part of the yesterday, this, of course, all refers to a bipartisan meeting on immigration that was here. As part of the discussions, Illinois Senator Dick Durbin suggested that as part of his proposal that there would be protections for immigrants from countries that had been ravaged by, you know, various crises and tragedy, and Haiti, of course, qualifies there. And according to the reporting that the Associated Press and other places have done, the president asked, you know, why do we want people from those countries? Then, of course, the second part of this is that there are reports that the president used very vulgar, derogatory term to describe African nations. And it's telling, perhaps, that in the president's tweets this morning, though he pushed back against the Haiti part of it, he didn't against the Africa part. There's no denial. He sort of said that he used coarse language or tough language, I think is his phrase in the tweet, but did not go on to say that he did not say these things. And I can also tell you, just in the last 20 minutes or half hour, the president, in a bit of extraordinary timing, had an event here at the White House honoring MLK, Martin Luther King Jr. And as part of that proclamation, when that was over, he was about to exit the room and leave, and a number of reporters, myself included, shouted questions at him, including whether he used that derogatory phrase to describe African nations, whether or not he was a racist. And the president did not respond to those questions. He simply ignored us and walked out.
Generally, though, it sounds like then that lawmakers, others who are condemning his language, believe he did use that language and his denials aren't having that much of an effect.
Well, Durbin, who was in the room, spoke publicly today and said that he did say these things, and he called them vile and offensive, and I think he might have used the word racist as well. Others, some of the Republicans in the room, have not yet commented. The White House, it must be noted, in their official statement yesterday evening about this incident, about the reports, about the meeting, they didn't deny it either.
Right.
So it does not seem that there is much momentum behind the idea that the president didn't say these things. Right now, the discussion is, well, what does that mean? What does that say about him? Because, of course, this is far from the first time that, President Trump has found himself in the midst of a firestorm regarding his comments on racial issues.
Yeah, so let's talk about the implications. There are political implications for this. There are also, of course, just, you know, the question of what to do if your president is racist, right, in this country and what it means. So let's start, though, with this question of this all happened in the context of a negotiation around a budget bill, right? So what are you hearing in terms of the likelihood that lawmakers will be able to reach a deal or if the likelihood of a government shutdown has increased?
Right. Well, basically, this was the immigration deal and whether DACA, you know, would be part of, you know, budget discussions, big picture, more immediately immigration. Certainly, they didn't leave this meeting yesterday any closer to a deal. There were some reports yesterday, there were some in the Senate, Jeff Flake in particular, who believed that they were perhaps close or had more or less agreed to in principle the outlines of the immigration deal. Other senators said, no, we're not quite there yet. And the White House has added to that and said, we don't have an agreement at this time. Certainly, this is yet another political mountain that this White House has to climb. And I think it's worth noting, this is a week that began with the White House strenuously trying to push back against the Michael Wolff book, Fire and Fury,
right. That
it contains depictions of a president, not in control, a president perhaps, the questions were raised about his mental capacity for the job. And the White House countered that this week, pushing back, just on the record with Sarah Sanders and so on at the briefings, but also by scheduling a number of events, including a meeting over immigration earlier in the week, in which the media was allowed to be there for nearly an hour. We were given a rather extraordinary look at how this happens and, how the sausage is made, if you will. This is the kind of negotiations you should have behind closed doors. And the White House clearly wanted the image out there of the president leading this meeting, being in charge, being in control, being in command of the issues and the room. And here we are just a couple of days later, and they're faced with these questions where, we have the moment today where a reporter in the White House asked the president if he's a racist.
Jonathan Lemire, I know you need to leave us. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Lemire is a White House reporter for the Associated Press. As I mentioned earlier, we're joined by Eva Patterson, president and co-founder of Equal Justice Society. And Eva Patterson, I just want to start by asking you what your reaction was when you heard the report.
Well, it's very interesting. I read a column yesterday by Charles Blow where he explained why so many people are supporting Trump, and he said it was because of the patriarchy and white supremacy. And the basic notion he put out was that some white working class people, and they're fabulous white working class people, so please do not misinterpret me, but some white working class people feel bad, but they feel like, well, at least I'm not black. And that's what the Republican Party and other racists have done for years. And so he laid out this wonderful analysis. And then as I'm about to send this out to the listserv of my organization, this Shithole Countries piece comes across. And it's just like, what? And you keep thinking we've gone as low as we can and we keep going lower. And I must say that I was kind of like, oh, it's just another Trump thing. And then I was talking to a young law clerk in my office who's from St. Vincent in the Caribbean, a black country, and she said she felt very hurt by it. And I said, oh, I don't feel hurt. I was just angry. And then later I read something and saw Anderson Cooper saying that Trump just doesn't want black people to come into this country. And I just started crying because there's so many assaults every day to all of us, people of color, women, and you can't react to all of it. But it was extremely hurtful. In a minute, we can talk about kind of the political implications of it, but it was another attack at people of color, and they're constant, and it's a political stance from Trump, but we can talk about that in a minute.
Yes, I'd rather talk about it in a minute because I think it's important to spend some time talking about what effect it has. We're joined now by Barbara Lee. She is, of course, East Bay Congresswoman representing California's 13th District, which includes Oakland. Good morning, Barbara Lee.
Good morning.
And I want to start with the same question in terms of the effect it had on you.
It made me very angry. It made me sad. But it's shocking that once again, the ideology and the racist attitudes of this president have come forward in a way now that really, in many ways, insults and attacks the African continent and the Caribbean countries, Latin Central America, and African Americans in America. This is part of the alt-right agenda. It's part of Steve Bannon's, even though he's not in the White House, the white supremacist agenda. I mean, this president campaigned on the birther movement to try to delegitimize President Obama as our first African-American president. He's discriminated against people in the past in his housing project. This is who this man is, and I hope that everyone in this country, Republicans and Democrats, people speak out and say, we have got to do something, because we can't have a country where this make America great again really means make America white again. And that's exactly what this president is communicating in many, many ways.
Well, let's hear some of our listeners' reactions. I'm going to start with Ellen in Benicia. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a couple of questions. Well, number one, I heard a commentator last night on the news, it was either CNN or MSNBC, who said that he thought that maybe Trump was being very brilliant in that he's abruptly changed the conversation from the Michael Wolff book to the being stupid to being a racist and rallying his base, and whether or not that really is a factor or whether or not some of this was contrived on Trump's behalf. The other part that's very disturbing to me is the deafening silence of the Republicans. Trump has been a known quantity for a while, but the deafening silence of the Republicans is very distressing. So thank you.
Ellen, thank you. Barbara Lee, one of your first tweets after you heard this story was, Paul Ryan, where are you on this? And why did you send that tweet?
I sent it because I want to hear Speaker Ryan not only say something and condemn these comments, but also put this president in check. We are responsible in the House of Representatives and in the Senate to be that checks and balances on the executive branch. And we've got to put this man in check, because not only are these comments and his ideology and attitudes racist, we see these reflected in his agenda and in his policies. And the Speaker and the Republicans need to, look at every effort now, every legislative effort, every policy with this lens. So that if they're not complicit in this, then they need to push back and say, we're not going to support this.
So you
and,
feel like,
I am shocked that they aren't speaking out and saying, putting this president in check. And that's what they need to do.
So you do feel that this makes all of the president's policy proposals, especially ones that affect people of color or immigrants, suspect. Is that what you're saying?
They've been suspect for us in Congress from day one, especially members of the Congressional Black Caucus, Hispanic Caucus, and Asian Pacific American Caucus. And the majority of Democrats see this as a lens we have to put on when this president comes forth with anything.
Sorry, first of all,
Eva Patterson, go ahead.
I'm so glad to be on the show with you, and Barbara is my congresswoman, and we love her. And this is part of the game plan of the Republican Party. There's a reason we've only heard from three Republicans, one of whom is a Haitian, Mia Love, and Trump hasn't apologized to her. In 1970, the Republican Party came up with the Southern Strategy. They decided that with the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, they could take the South away from the Democratic Party, and since then they have been very much aligned with white supremacy. Think about the Supreme Court stripping voting rights. Think about everything that Trump said in his campaign about Mexicans and Muslims. So there's a reason there's a deafening silence from the Republican Party. They are trading on this. They are hoping that white people who are not evolved will align with their white supremacist point of view and forget their economic interests. The reason I'm speaking today as a private citizen and not as head of a 501c3 nonprofit is that we need to take a cold, hard look at the midterms and turn these people out. We need to look at Alabama and see what happened there, and we need to get these racist people out of the Congress.
You're absolutely correct, because
Barbara
we
Lee.
Have to have checks and balances reinstituted in our system, because this is a part of their agenda. And I remember during the campaign, I warned people that Trump, now is the head of the Republican Party, and his policies and the policies that have been promulgated and worked on for decades, now they've got a standard bearer to bring this forward. And so people of conscience all around this country, and I think the majority of the country understands this, they've got to step up and they've got to say no to this, because we've got to move forward in terms of addressing racism, poverty, war, all the issues that are on the table. And we can't let this president turn us around.
Congresswoman Barbara Lee, thank you so much for joining us. I know you need to leave us. I appreciate you being on the program this morning.
Thank you, Barbara.
And let's hear from more listeners. Let's go to Sam in Sebastopol. Hi, Sam.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I really dislike Trump. I think he's sexist. I think he's loathsome. I think he lacks character, temperament, and intellect, but this particular attack is unfair. There's about 100 million Arabs in Africa, all in northern Africa, Egypt, and all that stuff. So simply pointing out that a continent is ravaged by poverty, corruption, lack of infrastructure, that's what that phrase means, right? Ignorance, lack of education. When you are using that phrase, which I don't want to repeat, that's what that means. And that's not necessarily, that's not racist, because there's 100 million Africans who are white.
But Sam, you don't think that in the context of saying, why should we let these people into this country, that it's that he's not disparaging the people, that he's not that it's not a racist comment within that context?
He's disparaging all of Africa, which is an impoverished continent, and includes 100 million very poor Arabs. Egyptians are impoverished as well. They're Arab. They're as fair-skinned as I am. It's a disgusting comment, but it's not racist. He's just pointing out that Africa is a nation where people are of lower education, and they have, and when you attack him this way, I think you're lionizing him to his base.
The Republican strategist Frank Luntz tweeted out that 43% of immigrants from African countries have a bachelor's degree or higher, and that's compared to 33% of the overall American population. And so this idea that people coming in from African countries are uneducated was pushed back against even by a Republican strategist. So
that characterization seems
quite broad. Eva Patterson, would you like to respond?
I was in Kenya about a year ago right now in Nairobi. Tall buildings, wealthy people. So I don't want to hear that in Africa is this impoverished nation. They're, of course, in an impoverished continent. Of course, there are poor parts of Africa, but there are poor parts of the United States. Just drive around Oakland and see all the people living in tents along the highway. And the other thing is, Trump juxtaposed his racist comments about Haiti, El Salvador, and certain African countries by saying, we want people from Norway. Norwegians, and I'm sure they're fabulous Norwegians, but those are white people. We used to talk about people speaking in a racist dog whistle. He speaks in a bullhorn. And if you look at Trump's history of racism, his comments about calling our country's shitholes, and we need to say those words out there, it's racist. I can probably never convince you of that. I heard Tucker Carlson last night saying the same thing, that it's not racist, and I realized I could talk from now until the end of time, and I couldn't change Carlson's view or your view, but in my estimation, and in the estimation of many people I talk to, that comment was straight up racist. Trump has a history of racism, and the Republican Party gets by on kind of catering to racist instincts.
Well, Sam, let me thank you for sharing your comment, and let me just try to get some more listeners on. I do want to hear how they're reacting to this. Rhett in Pennsylvania, what are your thoughts?
Hi, Nina. I'm glad to get on with you. Hey, I am just thrilled that Trump is willing to say these kinds of things. It does nothing but galvanize the progressive, intelligent, sensitive, multiracial country that we're living in. That's the reality of it. Let's not get all in a tizzy. Let's let him keep shooting himself in the foot all he wants. And believe me, these Republicans, the Republican Party, they wish that he would shut his mouth and not say this, because he's not helping their cause. They want their racism and their marginalization of people that are lesser than them, not only people of color. They don't mind poor white people being marginalized either to maintain the position. So let's not give them too much credit that it's dog whistles and that they like. They can't stand what Trump is doing. And I'm just glad that he does it, Nina, because it galvanizes all the rest of us.
Red, I hear your point about how it may galvanize the progressive base, and you may see that as an advantage. But Eva Patterson, does when the president of the United States when he makes a statement like that, does that embolden people with similar views? Does it increase the tension? Isn't there real and felt consequence to that, especially if you are a person of color?
Well, two things. And the listener, the person from Pennsylvania, your reaction was my initial reaction. Oh, that's just another bit of nonsense from Trump, and I'm going to make sure that I do everything I can to turn the Congress blue. But then later on, as a black person, it's an assault. It's an assault. And what we've been talking about in the civil rights community is, hey, we thought kind of racism and overt racism was fading away. And clearly these folks were just hiding, and Trump basically let them come out of their bag. We saw a woman killed in Charlottesville. We saw a train that was going to be blown up by white supremacists. We've seen Muslims attacked. And so the president of the United States sets a tone, and by being so overtly racist, he's basically signaling to the country that it's okay to hate people of color, Muslims, women. And so it's very, very dangerous. And if you look at any of the groups that track hate crimes, they're on the uptick because of Trump. And because there are lots of people out there who thought, oh, it's not good to be a white supremacist. Now the president's a white supremacist, so it's okay.
And let's go now to Sanai in Berkeley. Hi, Sanai.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having this really important discussion. The previous caller pretty much summarized what I had in mind, but I just wanted to say that what Trump said is probably the most benign statement, relatively to what he probably has said and no one has heard. It's not really surprising by any measure, and I'm not saying that we should not be outraged and shocked, but I think we need to do channel all of that outrage and shock into meaningful action, because else we're just going to constantly go in circles. And I don't mean to minimize what he said. I am from Africa, and even if I were not from there, I would be equally outraged. But I think it's time to do something about it instead of just constantly, being shocked by this guy. There's nothing shocking about what he says. Given who he is and what he's about. I also wanted to say that I think it's time for the Democrats now to draw the line and really stand their ground on immigration and not really capitulate to any of these racist immigration policies, which, again, are not surprising by any measure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts. Dave says, I'm not.
Eva?
Yes, Eva, let me just read Dave's comment. And then Dave says, I'm not surprised by his comments, nor am I surprised he's blatantly lying about it. Martha says, more of Trump's deplorable behaviors. GOP Congress equals deplorable enablers. Eva Patterson, sorry, go ahead.
I completely agree with the last caller. There are going to be more and more things like this happening between now and November. And we just need to take back the Congress, because people can start talking about impeachment. We can block some of the legislative moves. This tax bill was just horrible. And so there are a couple of phrases that I use a lot. One is don't mourn, organize. And the other is don't get mad, get even. So the things he says, they're hurtful, and I don't have skin of steel, and it's hard not to be bruised by such racism. But we have to be very strategic, and we have to figure out ways to fight back and to get our country back. The other two things are this. One, we need to call him out as a liar. He lies and lies and lies, and the press seems to talk about misstatements and the like. And we also need to say he's a racist, not that he's racially insensitive or it's not politically correct. He's a racist, and we need to call him out.
Ben writes, can you please speak about NPR's decision to use the vulgar word on air? Ben, I have an excerpt of a note that was sent to member stations from NPR Standards and Practices editor that I could read to you. He writes, his name is Mark Mimot. He writes, we didn't use the word last night when the news emerged, but this morning the president addressed the report saying he did not use that language. That significantly changed the story in our view, and we felt it necessary to say the word shithole so that listeners would have a complete picture of what was happening. That said, here at KQED, we have been asked to use the word sparingly and only as necessary. I guess I would simply add, we're quoting the president. Let's go next to Troy in San Francisco. Hi, Troy.
Hi. I really think that you guys are doing journalism a disservice here.
And why is that?
Really, because Trump's base can see through the deception going on here. He wasn't being racist. As one of your callers said, he was talking about countries that aren't doing really well. And he uses crude language. Hey, some Americans are crude people. You know, black people, 23% of black men are with Trump. The Atlantic Monthly just printed that. And part of that is that we know he's not racist. We've known Donald Trump since 1984. And you know, to be able to see that, like yesterday, he spent all day with the Prime Minister of Norway before he did this meeting. And now they're going to say, oh, he contrasted it with Norway. Of course he did. He spent the whole day with the Prime Minister of Norway. You know, it wasn't that he was like, oh, I just love white people. That's what was in his head, Norway.
Okay, you know? Well, Troy, thank you for sharing your perspective. Let's hear some more on our air. Let's go to Ron in Mill Valley. Hi, Ron.
Hi. There's another set of reasons why we should be against what Trump has said. He's basically damaging brand America. It's really important for us to recognize that when people buy Levi's or Coke or imitate us around the world, that brings great economic value to us, and it helps us set an example of civil behavior. When people don't buy our content, when they don't buy our television programming, you know, we are losing a position of leadership, and it does genuine economic damage to the whole economy, everybody in the economy.
Ron, thanks for sharing that. Eva Patterson, I think we're getting into, we only have a minute or so left, but we're getting into some of the broader effects of this. We've talked about how just the emotional aspect of it, but the broader implications of the effects of this on how we're viewed by other nations, foreign policy relationships, things like that.
I heard some analysis that this is going to really help China because other countries are going to go, why do we want to deal with this racist country? I also need to say I think it's ludicrous to say 23% of black men support Trump. If you looked at Alabama, 94% of black people voted against the Trump candidate. So that 23% comment is ridiculous. And if you look at Trump's history, he's been racist from the beginning. He said, I don't want blacks counting my money. They're lazy. He said the Central Park Five should be executed even when it was found out that they were innocent. He is racist. But, you know, I can't convince the guy who just called in that he's not, and he's not going to be able to convince me that Trump is a, you know, member of the NAACP. The last thing I'll say is that this has policy implications because they're talking about cutting Medicaid, health care, and the like, and that's all racialized. The fact that they say they want to have Medicaid recipients have to work, there are people who are in bed who cannot work, but we're going to make them work to get Medicaid. Medicaid is racialized. People see that as people of color. So this kind of white supremacist conversation has implications for policy.
And Eva Patterson. Yes, thank you so much. She's president and co-founder of Equal Justice Society. I appreciate you talking with us today on Short Notice.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it. Another Hour Forum is next. We'll be talking about quality preschool education. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. Stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.